seen so many young faces, I feel bloody ancient. That's a turn on. Enjoyed your film, by the way. Do the usual poetry, fidgety bit. I'll start with this poem last summer. Had a resident in my house in the scullery, the kitchen. Got quite attached to him actually. Put him out for about 6 months. He was a fly. And I called him Orlando. Because I've been the trip to Florida, I've been company in Florida in the Florida Springs, and Orlando, it's a cool name. Orlando. There is a housefly named Orlando, and he will never die. He has been granted immortality, but lately his spirits have been low. He has seen too many friends die, and his heart is heavy. He's been around for about 20 years, and in that time, he has lost 700 or so fly friends. Niels, Bjorn, Tracy, and Dan Harrigan, all gone. He has to spend more time alone. He would have preferred a stretch inside Sing Sing with fellow inmate flies for company. Over the years, he has found a light bulb or a jam sandwich. He was never typecast. He was never a fly in the soup. He is tired of watching his back and avoiding the newspapers rolled up into batons. Please understand him. He is tired of life, of death, and she's not everything. Next time, he will consider euthanasia and fly kamikaze style into the mouth of the Staffordshire Bull Terrier next door. Orlando, no more. Bit more surrealism later. As Gene said, I'm from County Durham, Northern England, and I think that's why I feel at home in Cork. I think the culture is very similar, very homely, very down to earth. Hard to put my finger on the connection, but I do feel a connection. And I was commissioned to write a poem about the area to try and celebrate the past and its strengths and its passions, and to look to the future as well. So this poem is called From the Sea. And I try and consider myself an internationalist, but I still live in in the village that I was sort of bred and born in. So I've been there for 48 years, and it's about 2 miles from Easington, where they make the Billy Elliot film. So I think that image kind of conjures up close streets and that kind of culture. I better explain the word in the poem, Maras. It's industrial, it's pitmatic, it's a language that came from the pits, from the colonies, and it means your workmate. One more word you might need to know. Penacalty is a local dish. It's our equivalent of Lancashire hot pot. Lots of potatoes and a bit of mutton in it. Penacalty. From the sea. The Danes run down to the coast. Castle Eden, Crimdon and Hawthorne. The sea washes the sun, leaving a blank canvas to reinvent ourselves. We never locked our doors on Billy Elliot Street. We ride the bittersweet swell, licking the rocks. Our tongues are flavoured with Penacalty, Rogan Josh, Nimmo's Best, and Turbo Shandy. The clean beach is redefining our identity, from ponies to computers, and coming over the airwaves is a new industrial language, call centres at Admiral Point, and Northern Sea, it brings and takes, comrades, amigos, manners. There's quite a few North American accents in the room tonight, so it's both for you, and it's also for a mate of mine, New York Post, who came to Newcastle many times, Frank Messina, and it's called Bible Lessons, Frank Messina. From your apartment across the Hudson, you heard the sirens in Manhattan and made your way downtown. The bald eagle was on your chest. It was your London Blitz, and you had to be on the front line. At Ground Zero, you helped to fill the barges, did your bit for the neighbourhood, a real native New Yorker. In between the jovial high fives and Al Pacino impersonations, I could sense your grief and disbelief. Why did they do it to my city? The dollar bill says, "In God we trust." Just to kind of lighten things up, I'm a child of the 60s and had great parents, really proud of them, so the best friends you'll ever have, celebrate them. And you know, there was a saying in the 60s in California, you know, you dig. So I wrote this poem called You Dig, and I wrote it like a haiku, like a wee Japanese poem. You've got to, I'll give you the clue in the first line and try and work out the last line. You did. Where the Beach Boys were inspired and movies were born. California. I dig it, man. They share the same name as an English county. They could lick you to death. Staffordshire Bull Terriers. I dig that hound. He can get up your nose if you commit a crime. He always says, "Just one more thing." Columbo. Dickie style. We wouldn't be here without it. Even flies do it. Sex. I think that stuff. The Scots invented it. Glaswegians will kill for it. Whiskey. I think that stuff. You can hang a picture. Or make a mortar. Blue tap. I did that stuff. You can eat it in Buda or a Costa Rica in Pesh. Hungarian goulash. I actually eat that stuff. So once a rally, put them in your suitcase. I grow them on my allotment. Potatoes. I did that stuff. Just pop at the end, you know, because the poem get jealous, you know. I'd like to read the title of the small pamphlet here. The title of the pamphlet that's just come out at Christmas is The Singing Ducks of Amiens. And we'll explain. Amiens is twinned, it's our twin town with Canterbury in northern France. And had a good time there. Discovered that Jules Verne actually lived there towards the end of his days. And this is what can come out of poetry and twinning and those kind of associations and reciprocating things, ideas, mates, culture, things like that. So this is from Nick Standen, who's a Durham poet, and it's called The Singing Ducks of Amiens. Or I think there's two pronunciations, it might be Amiens, I'm sure. We listen to jazz on a summer's day, sitting by the river's song. There was a confetti of sheet music in the wind. Then we noticed Billie Holiday and Duke Ellington floating downstream. Earlier, the ducks had been shouting for bread, and their quacking had synchronized with the quartet. We tried to imagine if they could read music. This Dr. Doolittle concept had us all creased up. We laughed until we crossed the channel. Back in England, a new code of friendship developed. Instead of the normal hello or sincerely or how are you getting on, mate, we used quack instead to remind us of the good times in our twin town. I hope those ducks escape the gun and the butcher of Aberdeen. Their floating harmonies we understood like birds of a feather. One of the great things about doing a bit of scribbling on a poem is that occasionally you can blag your way into a reading or a festival. A couple of years ago I learned of this festival in Italy on a lake just north of Milan, and managed to get an invite. And the festival was sponsored by a vineyard that had gone to heaven, brilliant. And got on chatting to the vineyard owner on the first night when everybody had a kind of meal. And he said, you'll have to come to the vineyard on Sunday. 2 weeks later, kind of recovered. Called Where Hares Eat Grapes. On a good day, you can see the Alps from the vineyard of Giuseppe Zanetta. The September rain hesitates in the next valley. The earth is pregnant with Madonna and child. A lifetime of harvests from cradle to grave. Giuseppe is a caring man. His vines are cloned from his own arteries. A glass of clean Novaresi, glowing like lip gloss. The grapes on his land are the most pampered in Borgomenero. We traverse the humpback hill from the count's house. In the cellar, he offers me a mouthful of sky. A great day. On Wednesday night, as Gene mentioned, there's a bit of a do at the White House in Limerick. It's a great venue, started by Barney Sheen back in 2003, I believe. And there's an anthology between Newcastle and Limerick being launched. And, my mate, who's a real poetry activist, has helped to put the anthology together. This is about the trip we made back in 1991 to Dublin, my first trip to Dublin, And we stayed in a hotel opposite the floozy in the jacuzzi on Common Street. I believe she's gone now, and there's a spy or something there, isn't there?
Never in the ghetto.
And he's a bit of a mentor for me, Keith, my sparring partner for the character. And I mean, it's the tip of the iceberg of what he gets up to. My dad had a scene called Acting the Ghost. Probably, you know, and it's in Newcastle and Durham. Transported over there, but if I was being a naughty lad, you know, acting the ghost. So this night, Keith was acting the ghost. At the hotel, we drank Guinness and claimed to know Jack Charlton. We discussed De Valera, the Pope, the Easter Rising, and the Eurovision Song Contest before the Riverdance phenomena. Then Keith opened the fourth floor window and climbed out. The concierge searched the Dublin skyline for dangling feet. I've seen it all before. The Exhibitionist. A Groundhog Day style time loop. I try to recall how Carl Malden in the streets of San Francisco had talked down city signs from the Golden Gate Bridge. I looked across to O'Connell Street, the widest boulevard of Europe. I shouted, "Last race to the boulevard!" And you know what? That did the trick pretty damn quick. Did the business. Oh, there's a risque poem here. Quite a good poetry scene in Holland. I've been going through the last 15 years and reading cafes and that, and got immersed in Dutch culture. And, you know, when you fly from Newcastle with KLM and you land in Schiphol, it's 10 minutes into Amsterdam, and then you sort of come up the central station and you hit the red light district. You can't avoid it. So after 15 years of observing this city, I had to put something down just about, you know, observing what's going on. The city and desire. The eyes of the world are here, but eye contact is limited, as if it's chest. Young women stand at ground floor windows in the neon gaze and combing their hair and smiling. The Amstel city defines herself and her parts. Young couples and families wander into the district of the brothel, now a pilgrimage on the tourist trail of Generation X. The canal ride to Anne Frank's house is down in the pecking order. A scout stamp party talk football and sex in the Jolly Sailor pub. Shy boys from Birkenhead may lose their cherry tonight, and the groom will miss the easy get back to John Lennon Airport. A death threat text on the Moby will bleep from the jilted bride's mother during the blowjob. Hustlers selling Viagra to Bolton pensioners loiter in doorways like alley cats. Amsterdammers never hang neck curtains. There's nothing to hide. Came across this story on BBC Radio 4 one afternoon. Couldn't believe me either, actually. It's about the Barbie doll, quite an iconic symbol for girls over the years, and for feminists, maybe. Could believe me that they were actually getting rid of Barbie's boyfriend, Ken. You know. So, had to put pen to paper, celebrate this. because I was an action man, you know, myself. You know. You might recognise the first verse. It's by a Danish band called Aqua.
Oh.
It's called Barbie. I'm a Barbie girl in a Barbie world. Life in plastic. The toy maker, Mattel, are giving Barbie's boyfriend a makeover. But does she really want you back, Ken? These days, Barbie is a symbol of postmodernist feminism. She's independent, financially and emotionally. She's reading Bridget Jones. She doesn't want a man. That's too much trouble. More women are living alone and enjoying it. She's not married, not bothered. Barbie doesn't need you, Ken. Unless you can get your act together, mate. If you can stop acting like a 23-year-old for 45 years and spending less time in the bathroom. You're too groomed, Ken. A tad too gay. You're more than enough, Ken. And another thing, that bleach blonde Aussie surfer look and overgroomed David Beckham, Pierce Brosnan type, with nothing much to say, a so passé. Even Chris Waddle isn't looking like Chris Waddle anymore. So you see, Ken, I'm a Barbie girl in a Barbie world. Life in plastic. I've got a bit of a reputation as a football poet, so I couldn't resist throwing in a football poem tonight. And it's great because you get to go to kind of tournaments, you know. I won't be going to Austria pitching this year because we're bloody crap. But I got to Portugal and had a great time. And I mean, England were out of the competition by the time I landed. But I was commissioned to write this by the British Council to keep the England fans entertained and they'd all gone home. So I was in an Irish pub in Lisbon, full of Czech fans and Dutch fans. But it was brilliant. It's called 11 Ways to Avoid Lending Your England Shirt to Anybody. Number one, warrior. May I borrow your England shirt? Look, mate, I didn't lay down my life at Trafalgar and Balaclava so you could borrow my England shirt. Two, self-importance. May I borrow your England shirt? Unfortunately, Robert Kilroy Silk is wearing it. Three, egomaniac. May I borrow your England shirt? You are not worthy. Four, suffering. May I borrow your English shirt? Look here, mate. I didn't sit through two penalty shootouts with Germany. The penalty shootout with Portugal. The last two crucial minutes of Zinedine Zidane scoring against us. So you could wear my English shirt. Fine. Hopeless. May I borrow your English shirt? I'm dying of Mantel disease. And all you talk about is my English shirt. Six, evasive. May I borrow an England shirt? Do you think I'm made of England shirts? Seven, forgetful. May I borrow an England shirt? I left Italian from the 30th of Estadio d'Aluva. Eight, kinky. May I borrow an England shirt? Only if I can fuck a footballer's wife in it. Nine, obsession. May I borrow an England shirt? It already has a name on the back and I'm not prepared to change it from Rooney. 10. Justice. May I borrow an England shirt? Only if I can score the winner with my left arm in the World Cup final. In the last minute of extra time against Argentina. Eleven, anyone shouting? Is anyone shouting? How are we doing for time, folks? Few off?
Yeah, we'll catch you.
Bear with me.
This poem is about, you know, one of those spontaneous nights when you go to a brilliant party and you don't expect it, and something magic happens. And this happened on the Billy Elliot coast. Coming home from a gig one night, the mate said, "Look, I've got all these guitars that I've been given over the years, and the strings are broken, and the necks are broken. Let's burn them and dance around the fire." So this is what happened. It's called Equinox. It was at the time of equal days and equal nights, walking home from the gig. We knew tonight was just right. Mickey had an elephant's graveyard of broken guitars in his garage. In a ceremony like burning the wicker man, we cremated three guitars, a pagan ritual, a communion of rock and roll, the embers of harmonies, spirits rising, Hendrix and Elvis, stars in the sky. We lay back on the earth, in the sand dunes of Crimlin. The great bear was in the north. We listened to the music of the dark. During my observations, part of County Down I'm from is a very macho kind of place. You know, lots of tattoos, and you go in pubs and guys and chew and chew and go like that and give me the stare. Still like that, it's incredible. So I wrote this as a homage to the Hard Knocks in my village. It's called Elvis in the Community. Are you lonesome tonight? Barry is married to Beverly. They met at the local disco and honeymooned in Magaluf. He always reads the Sun and cleans the car on a Sunday. He drives to B&Q like a fucking maniac. He's more competitive than Schumacher. He meets the lads on a Friday night and she meets the lasses. Every Saturday night they say no to each other. Are you lonesome tonight? Barry has a hobby. He's borderline fanatic. His room is filled with records and books and memorabilia of the King. He remodels the house to visit Graceland. He spent the no-win, no-fee whiplash compensation on a cosmetic pursed lip. Uh-huh. The paunch around his waist came naturally. And now we talk to the Geordie Tennessee Drill. On karaoke nights, he howls like a hound dog, thinks he has real vocal style. He christened his firstborn, Aaron Elvis Barry Carter. The vicar had a turned up dog collar and sideburns as thick as the Black Forest. Barry's got a tattoo. It runs the length of his back. There is a dedication to Presley, but the ink ran out for Beverly. Are you lonesome tonight? This is a poem about my uncle, again a miner, both sides of families, miners, through the generations. A very shy man, but apparently he was a good rope man at the pit. I don't know what that quite means, but he had a hobby. A lot of miners kept greyhounds or pigeons. But Uncle A painted cows, just cows. Incredible.
framed cows stored in moonlit meadows above the fireplace in the parlour stillness, mulling over time between moons, just chewing the cud in deep thought before bedtime. Over the countryside, an inky wash of a watercolour sky, and coming from the brush strokes, the smell of cows. Some poets would think it de rigueur to see the darkness, but my uncle Abe, the quiet Edwardian, who painted cows, saw the moonlight, his doe-eyed solitude, creating Frisians and Jerseys in the bright evening. To this day, I hold his golden watch, awarded for outstanding art at the 1920 Royal Darlington Show, and all this time, waiting for the cows to come home. Is that imminent? Yeah?
No.
Yeah? One more?
No,
right.
Yeah. Yeah?
Okay. Yeah, I'm hogging it a bit, I'll finish off. Thanks for your time. God bless. Cheers. Oh, I'll just have a run. A goal is a goal. This jammy goes, the cup goes, the orgasmic goes, the truth of care goes, the golden goes, the last minute extra time goes, the wonderful goes, the goal against the enemy goes, the open play goes, the penalty goes, the last minute extra time goes, the swing the park goes, off the back of the arse goes. When all said and done, remember, a goal is a goal.